The designated hour having arrived, I'd like to call to order this special meeting of Ansel Glenk's Quorum Forum podcast, the podcast local governments need to do business. In the chair, it's me, Daniel J. Bolin, here for a special meeting with one important agenda item, what to do when you get sued. But first, let's take the roll. Our first guest is a litigator at Ansel Glenk, focuses on multiple facets of municipal and general litigation, including insurance coverage disputes, civil rights claims defense, FOIA compliance, breach of contract, and personal injury. He loves summertime, and we're going to ask him about it. Aaron Bitterman is here.
Hello.
Aaron is present. Aaron, what do you love about summer? What's going on?
Aaron is present. What I love about summer, Taste of Randolph, Rib Fest, baseball, fireworks, and the sunshine, of course.
That's a pretty good list. What's your favorite fest if you had to pick one?
It's got to be Rib Fest because it combines food and music.
This is the Rib Fest in what city?
In Chicago, the one North Center.
Ah, yes.
I don't want to offend Naperville, but I think the city does it better.
Ooh, yeah. Well, the Naperville one, very good. Pitbull played this year.
And Steven Tyler.
Right. As you get some bigger names. But that packed street fest situation, it can be intimidating for some, but it's packed for a reason.
Very true.
Any barbecue faves, just ribs or other kinds of barbecue items that you enjoy?
I've been doing bratwurst recently.
Mm.
How about yourself, Dan?
I do have a smoker at my house, and it's been getting some use in the summertime. I'm not very sophisticated at it. I'm not haven't done like a brisket or something, which I think takes about 2 weeks to cook. I do some, grilling burgers on it and bratwurst as well. But
you ever smoked a salmon?
Yeah, we do smoke salmon. That's easy. It's delicious. It's good.
I like the versatility because you could eat it then you could use it later in your salad, whatever need be.
Smoked salmon, it's a top summertime pick. Write it down. Aaron Bitterman's present. Behind the glass for our safety is engineer Rick, and he is present. And we have a quorum. So let's get right down to business while we're here. Why we're here, Aaron. We've got local governments, people like to sue the government. They do it all the time. You see it every day in your practice, right?
Every day.
But the folks that are working at local governments probably don't see them come through the door all the time. So
hopefully never, but it's just a part of doing business these days. So you're going to have one, hopefully not many.
Right. And so how does one of these things even get started? Folks might not even know.
The first thing that'll happen is you'll get a summons, and that'll be usually delivered to the clerk.
Mm-hmm.
It will not be delivered by the person suing you themselves. They aren't actually allowed to do so. So it'll be delivered by a third party. It could actually be a sheriff or just about anybody. When it comes to service, it's one of those things in the movies you see a lot that people are trying to dodge service.
Right.
You know, let's go flee to Cuba.
So you hide behind the blinds, draw the shades, turn the lights off. Is that what you recommend doing?
Yeah, I would not recommend doing that because if you're a municipality, by definition, you have a piece of land and you are not going anywhere. So if they don't get you today, they'll get you tomorrow. I think it's a futile operation to try and evade service. And it's a technicality that as a municipal client, you're never going to prevail on. So I wouldn't fight it there.
Right. So some people play games with it, but you don't recommend that local governments do that.
Definitely don't recommend local governments do that.
So once you receive a copy of this lawsuit, you're the village clerk, you're the city clerk, you've got it in your hands. What's the first thing that you do with it?
The first thing you should do is call your attorney. And that your attorney will probably tell you to call your insurance carrier.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you don't have an attorney, you should call Ansel Glenk. Then you'll have an attorney. if you don't have an insurance carrier, you should call Ansel Glink. But you should definitely call your attorney because they'll know what to do. And you should not freak out. It doesn't, just because there's a lawsuit, it doesn't mean it's a big lawsuit. And you have to assess the claim. Sometimes something will look very scary, but what it comes down to is something very minor.
Right, and usually these things, when they do come through the door, they're not 100% of a surprise.
They're rarely a surprise. It's especially if it's a bigger lawsuit. It's something you've seen coming. It might be a dispute with a contractor that you've gotten a bunch of phone calls with and going back and forth, and someone's saying, "I'll sue you," or something like that. So it's generally not the first time that you became aware of the lawsuit. And if it's the other side is rational, they'll probably try and negotiate and get either what they're looking for in terms of space at the table, if they're looking for an injunction, or they'll be asking for money. So it's not something that should come as too much of a surprise, unless you're a much bigger city and you can't keep track of everything.
What's an injunction, for those that don't know?
Well, they're going to try and compel you to do something for them in simplest form. It might be an injunction to get them access to something that hasn't had access. It might be an injunction to stop something immediately, which is the most common.
Right, to stop you from doing something.
Yes.
Right. It could be, or a mandatory injunction, like to issue a building permit or something, or a zoning relief, or to like stop some kind of government action.
Yeah,
right?
It might be to stop some sort of demolition because it's someone's property, or it could be too loud to the neighbors. It could be just about anything. So they're not always just seeking money. There could be other means. I mean, other relief. Other relief.
When you call your attorney about a lawsuit, and of course we're just scratching the surface here today, and we can't cover everything. But what are some of the common things that they might ask you to do when you call them about a lawsuit you received?
Well, one of the first things they're going to do is tell you to preserve the evidence. And that includes the paper file, but also includes electronic information. And when I talk about the paper file, I mean any documents that would be directly related to it. I do not recommend just going and backlighting a fire and throwing your whole file cabinet in there.
You don't want to fire up the shredders. That's what not to do. And, I think that very, very often folks, unfairly, try to paint local governments as sometimes, doing something nefarious. But I think more often than not, folks want to do the right thing and are not trying to intentionally destroy records or what have you.
Correct.
But so I think very often just folks need to be reminded when a lawsuit is filed that they need to hang on to these papers.
Right. And if there's a question about it, ask your attorney. And if you don't have an attorney yet, it's better to be safe than sorry. So just put it all there and let it be till you get some legal advice. What you don't have to do is turn it over right away. And that's the other end of this. Just because you get a lawsuit, don't, take everything that could possibly be related and give it to the other side and say, here. That's not going to make the lawsuit go away. But also, there could be some privilege documents in there. You hear about attorney-client privilege and all those other types of stuff. You don't want to waive that, and you don't want to turn over something that could be harmful. So don't turn everything over, but make sure it's secured.
So privilege, you mean something like you don't have to, that's something that you could keep to yourself, like something like you talk about with your attorney that you don't have to tell the other side about.
Right, you want something protected.
You want to be able to have a robust discussion, get good advice from your attorney. So that's a privilege. You don't have to turn that over in discovery, which is the time when they ask for these documents. And what's more, there's other kind of privileges too, a deliberative process privilege. You're the litigator, you tell me. There's lots of kinds of privilege.
Yes, there's lots. There's in the state, there's a insured privilege, which protects communications with your insurer. There's marital privilege, which usually doesn't apply to government, but it could come in elsewhere.
That's true. The other piece of that question is, you mentioned the other side asking you for documents or turning over documents. They really shouldn't be talking to you, the other side, directly. Their attorney shouldn't be talking to you directly. Tell us about who should be talking to who during the course of a lawsuit.
Okay, so once the lawsuit is filed and you inform the plaintiff or his attorney that you're represented, they should be going through your counsel. They should not be now submitting FOIA requests and calling up to talk to people about it. They've initiated a lawsuit. So those other traditional avenues, the friendly avenues, are no longer valid.
Mm-hmm. Direct questions about the lawsuit or questions from the other side during the lawsuit to your attorney. That's the general
advice. That's the general advice. I'd go through the attorney. Even if it seems to be harmless, you don't know what they're looking for, and you don't know if it's something that could expose you to additional problems. So you have to just refer to your attorney once the lawsuit is started.
More about this preserving the evidence piece. Sometimes you'll hear about coming through something called a litigation hold letter. What is a litigation hold letter, and what should you do when you receive it?
So oftentimes, before a lawsuit's filed, you'll get a letter from someone's attorney saying, you must preserve all of these documents related, and they'll list a litany of types of evidence that they might be looking for. It could be files, it could be records, it could be video, it could be audio. And once that comes through the door, even if there isn't a lawsuit, you have to start working to preserve the evidence.
And this could come through even before the lawsuit comes through the door.
Yes, they frequently arise before the lawsuit is filed. And just because you get one, don't freak out. It doesn't mean that you're going to get a lawsuit.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're just preventive, and then a lawsuit is not filed. But they do mean business, because if one is filed, if a litigation hold letter arises and then they wait 6 months to file a lawsuit, you're still on the hook from when the litigation hold arrived.
You're right. So that's a good question. Like, does it, when you get a litigation hold letter from some potential litigant, do you have to hold on to these documents forever?
Well, the duty attaches the moment that litigation is reasonably anticipated. And that can mean a lot of different things. For instance, just because someone is having a bad day and goes, "I'm going to sue you," and starts yelling at you, that doesn't necessarily mean you're on notice.
Right.
But when you get a letter from an attorney that's telling you to preserve this and lists some specifics, that's when the duty attaches. But generally, you don't have a duty to preserve evidence. If there's no reason to keep something, don't start just keeping everything that you've ever produced. You know, you'd have just boxes and boxes and rooms of rooms.
Right. This is in reference to the litigation, of course. I mean, I'm sure that you've got your regular records retention schedule with the state archivist or what have you. You have a normal procedure for disposing of records. I think you're talking about, tell me if I'm wrong, keeping documents outside of that normal procedure because there's some threat of litigation out there.
You are absolutely correct, Dan. You want to follow your normal procedures. You want to make sure that they're in compliance with all the rules. And again, you should work with an attorney to develop that.
Sure.
But you shouldn't think that you have to go above and beyond the standards until you are notified about a lawsuit.
Oh, which could come either from a pre-suit litigation hold letter or the actual lawsuit coming in the door.
Oh, yes, or the lawsuit itself.
Do litigation hold letters come through after the lawsuit is filed sometimes?
Sometimes they do arrive after, and that might they might be trying to expand what they're looking for just in case it is not clear. You might get a letter like that, but traditionally there's something that will come in before the lawsuit.
Now, does a litigation hold letter sometimes, will you sometimes receive those from your own attorney telling you to hold on to documents related to the lawsuit?
Attorneys will inform their clients to retain the documents. This is something that, you know, applies to every lawsuit. So if there's something odd or something different, you probably will expect your attorney to tell you. A good attorney should know what is immediately relevant, such as they're going to tell you to retain a video if they know that it's on video. I mean, some things seem pretty simple, but if you don't have a procedure to preserve this stuff, it could get lost.
Right. And so it's important to preserve evidence. And when you have notice of the lawsuit, whether it comes from the other side, the actual lawsuit, or your own attorney telling you, and maybe you should know on your own, to hold on to the evidence related to the lawsuit because you might need it later.
Right. And it's also not an excuse that your attorney didn't tell you or that you didn't get the hold letter. If you get a hold letter, that puts you on notice. But once a lawsuit is filed, even if your attorney hasn't instructed you, You can't play dumb and just say, "Oh, I didn't know that." I had to keep this knife that might have been used in the murder.
Right.
If it's a reasonable person would know, it's your responsibility.
Now, you're not talking just about knives. You're talking about records, and with the increasing use of electronic records, this could be a huge. What are your obligations with respect to electronic records?
So this also includes electronic records, and electronic records, the definition is growing by the day.
Right.
Primarily, we're dealing with emails. Nowadays, emails are how most people communicate. Everybody uses email, and if they don't, That's a red flag.
That's weird.
Yes. Some people don't use it exclusively or don't use it for everything, but I don't know anyone that doesn't use an email address. Do you, Dan?
No, I hear like if some organizations starting to use like Slack and some like other like internal messaging platforms. But I think that's definitely the exception rather than the rule.
Right. So you got email, and then you also have when you say electronically stored information, also ESI. That includes instant message chat. That could be your Gmail. That could be Slack, as Dan said. Any way that's communicated. Obviously, you still have video, photo, and voicemails. Those are just now preserved digitally, as opposed to the tape in your answering machine, or the cassette that used to record over every 24 hours. Now you might be storing it a little bit longer because doesn't take up as much space.
Right. I think with the increased use of electronic records, you're going to be getting increased amounts of it's easier to hang on to this stuff because it's smaller, easier to store. But you're also generating a lot more records too, which makes the project to preserve evidence possibly more unwieldy.
Oh, that is certain. It's become a lot more complicated, and you might need to have someone that's specialized in it or at least has some training in it to help things go smoothly and that you don't end up having to track things down that might have disappeared already.
Right. Because sometimes things that are deleted can still be undeleted.
Everything can be undeleted. And, I mean, the world of digital electronic information just keeps growing. I mean, you go back to the old case where they want the parrot to testify about what was said at the scene. Now you have the Google Home that's recording you at all times, and that is litigation going on right now if that is discoverable.
Or the Alexa or the what have you.
Yeah, Alexa.
Be listening, trying to figure out if they recorded anything that might be relevant to the lawsuit.
Right, if you're a conspiracy theorist, they're recording you all the time, right?
I guess.
They might be recording you all the time, but you never know. That could exist.
I keep getting weird ads in my social media feeds that sound like I said something in the house the other day, and it turns up in my social media feed.
Agreed. I don't know how everyone knows I need a Van Halen t-shirt. It seems like every advertising company is trying to sell me one.
I've been Googling Van Halen t-shirts on your computer, bud. I'm sorry.
Ah, I appreciate it.
So, the kinds of electronically stored information are increasing. How do you go about preserving this?
I think it's important that if you have an IT department, mm-hmm. that's information technology.
That's what I think it means.
I'm not sure.
Anyone else? I saw a movie last summer with a kid with a red balloon that was IT.
Yeah, that makes sense.
never mind. Sorry. If you have an
electronic... Is that a Stephen King joke?
Yeah, it was a... Sorry about that. If you have electronically stored information, if you have an IT department, how should you engage them to preserve this information?
Well, the first thing is you have to tell them. That's something I run into all the time, is that my client's aware of the lawsuit, and it might be the mayor, or it might be the village administrator, or somebody, but they don't convey the information to the people that could preserve it. Right. And I think that's the most important process, is having some sort of procedure. Now, you don't want to tell everybody. You don't want gossip going around village hall.
Right.
But the people that need to know need to know.
We come up with a plan to communicate that the need to preserve records within your own organization.
For sure.
No, that's good advice.
And you should probably notify the department heads that it's relevant. If it's an EEOC claim or, you know, disgruntled employee, you want to notify human resources to make sure that they keep everything and they pass it down. If you just keep it, if you don't share this information, it's useless and you're never going to have a procedure in place.
That's good advice. What other kinds of things do you see your clients do, or do you advise your clients to do when a lawsuit comes in, especially with respect to electronically stored information?
First line of advice would be, before you determine what to keep, you have to look over the complaint with your attorney or consult with your attorney, because it could get very expensive to start just keeping everything. I believe that with some guidance, you could focus and save some time and money down the road.
Come up with a plan with your attorney on what to keep. Yes. Not just to keep, like, it's a big ask to preserve all the evidence, but what evidence of what, but come up with a plan with your attorney about what that is.
And in the interim, you might want to put a short halt to your regular destruction program. If you have a 30-day policy on retaining emails, until you figured out what's going on and what you need to keep, put a quick end to that. And then you could resume it once you've stored the significant information.
Yeah, just put it on pause until you figure out what you need.
Which goes back to making sure everyone's involved. If you once a month your office says, you know what, we clean out everything once a month. Anything that's not used goes. That's dangerous if you have a lawsuit that comes in and you haven't yet notified everyone to pull their documents, digital or paper, out of that bin.
Yeah, and it's not just advising reminding them what to keep, but also kind of triggering in their mind what else to keep. They might not realize that they have text messages on their phone that might be relevant that their provider deletes routinely, but you might need to preserve those for purposes of the litigation, or emails. You've got your public email, where obviously you would think of those, but did they get stored somewhere on some other email account somehow? Kind of important to focus what they need to keep, but also call to mind where else it might be.
Certainly. People, it's not common sense to be sued. If you've been sued too many times, that's not something you want to go through. Right. So it is going to be a new situation, and every situation is going to be different.
Right. Every lawsuit's a little different. The technology keeps changing. So it's important to come up with a plan with your attorney.
Right. This podcast might be outdated tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, that's a shame.
but you know, there could be flying cars, and you'll never know what to keep.
Right. There could be. But that's just a good advice of why to keep reaching out. Your attorneys keep on top of this stuff. And the way different kinds of technology and information that needs to be preserved, and coming up with that plan is really the real message. So it sounds like. Do you have any other final thoughts on what to do when a lawsuit comes in? Any good advice? I'm sure there's plenty, but just some of the high points that we hit here today.
I would definitely say do not panic. The wheels of justice are slow, so don't get yourself too worked up immediately. The law provides you some time to respond. You know, depending on where you are, you're going to have 28 days to answer, 30 days to answer, and you could always ask for more time if you have a good reason. So don't panic. Take your time with getting the right advice.
That's good. And when a lawsuit comes in, it doesn't necessarily mean that you did anything wrong. People could file lawsuits for any reason. They literally let anybody file pieces of paper at the courthouse. And so I think almost everybody. So I think that advice not to panic is good advice.
And thanks, Dan.
We appreciate that you came in today and talked to us a little bit about what to do when you get sued. But it is a special meeting, so we have to have public comment. So let's take a look at some of the questions that we get here. Maybe you could help us out. One of our former police officers has been involved in some controversy in his new community. The local paper has sent us a FOIA request for his disciplinary records. Are we allowed to release the records?
Well, it depends how old the records are. In a recent appellate court decision, an Illinois court upheld a municipality's denial of a FOIA request asking for the disciplinary history for a city employee. In Johnson versus Joliet Department, the requester had asked for the disciplinary history for a city employee. The city denied the request, citing Section 8 of the Personnel Records Review Act that prohibits the release of disciplinary records of a government employee that are more than 4 years old, and that it had no disciplinary records for the period within the prior 4 years. The requester sued, arguing that the statute does not apply to FOIA requests. The appellate court agreed with the city, finding that the requested records expressly exempted from FOIA under Section 7.5Q of FOIA that states the records prohibited from release under the Personal Records Review Act are exempt from FOIA. The court distinguished between citizen complaints, that depending on the nature of the complaint may not be exempt, and disciplinary records, which are expressly exempt from FOIA.
Well, that's an important decision for folks. I know that law enforcement issues have increasingly been in the news, but for any local government that has employees, and I think they all do, knowing when to release records, whether they might be exempt, his personnel records, that's important to review with your attorney when that FOIA request comes in.
Certainly, and I know most municipalities have someone designated to answer FOIA requests, and you got to make sure they're aware of this new law.
Yeah, you've got to.
Well, I don't know if it's a law or a ruling, but it's a new standard.
It's a good case to know.
It is a good case to know.
Google Allo user Village ID 10T writes, "I'm an eccentric billionaire, and this summer weather has me thinking about melting snow. There's an envelope on your desk containing a cash prize for Aaron Bitterman if he can guess what the city of Joliet paid per ton for rock salt last winter." Whoa.
Per ton, that's 2,000 pounds?
Yep. 2,000 pounds.
I'm not in the salt industry, but I'm guessing about $300?
Ooh. Man, but let's talk about it a little bit. What this might mean for you, though. This is a billionaire cash prize. It could be a lot of money. What would you do with a substantial cash prize?
$1 billion? Well, you know, I obviously would return to work the next day and carry on my daily tasks.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But then I'd take a vacation.
Yeah? Where would you go?
Well, if it was the winter, I'd go somewhere warm.
Yeah.
If it was the summer, probably go up to Alaska, maybe Iceland, and check out some of those places that are not always accessible in the winter.
Oh, that's a good point. Is that where Santa lives?
Allegedly.
Hmm.
Never met him before.
Santa Claus. Well, yeah, I don't want to meet him when he's at my house. I want to, but if I interrupt him while he's working, he might not leave the presents. So is it, yeah, your final answer, $300 per ton?
Well, Joliet might get a good deal, but $300 per ton sounds about right.
I'm afraid I have the actual answer right here. It was $46.13 per ton. This substantial cash prize, I'm going to open it up right here. It's I have to return it back to this eccentric billionaire. Oh, it was only $15. So
I don't feel so bad.
And
you could tell that this is obviously not planned because I didn't do any research on it since I was off by $250. You know, everything here is spontaneous, and Dan keeps everybody on their toes.
I can't control who writes in here. But it's nice to know that we have some. Good for them. Some wealthy listeners. I'm glad that they're doing well, and appreciate at least the gesture of philanthropy.
Maybe next time I'll get it.
Yeah, maybe next time. So that's why we'll have to have you back.
Thank you.
So next on the agenda is the Department of Public Works. If you've got any upcoming publications, speeches, conferences coming up, maybe at least you could tell us where folks might be able to hear from Ansel Glenk's litigators on the Ansel Glenk Defense e-news newsletter. What about that?
Well, there was a recent webinar on social media and township government with Aaron Pell. I believe it's titled Township Officials of Illinois Website.
That's right. Aaron Pell and I appeared with the Township Officials of Illinois. On their website, that webinar is still available on their website. If you want to check it out, me personally, I'll be speaking with Greg Jones at the Illinois Municipal League Conference for Battling Billboard Bullies: Strategies for Controlling Outdoor Advertising, and I recently found out we'll be speaking with Carrie Lynn Kraftheffer, Dirk Price, and Julie Tappendorf at a session called Using Your Powers for Good: Tips for Uniting Your Board at the Illinois Municipal League Conference. We're looking forward to that.
Oh, those are some big names. Should be great.
Oh, I agree. It's a great panel. Before we go, I want to remind everyone to subscribe at wherever good podcasts are heard. Leave us a review. We prefer good reviews. Email us your podcast questions and ideas at podcast@anselglenk.com. and visit us online at quorumforum.anselglink.com. Can I get a motion to adjourn?
Second it.
Seconded. All in favor. The ayes have it. We'll see you next time on Ansel Glink's Quorum Forum podcast.